Hello, and welcome to Quilt Achievements Markets Uncut podcast, your weekly insights into the topics and trends that we have been exploring for you here at Quilt Achievements. Remember, so you don't miss a future episode, be sure to hit the follow button on whichever streaming platform you are listening on, or by following hashtag QC Weekly Comment on LinkedIn. I'm your host, Oswald Odunton, Investment Manager for the Managed Portfolio Services based out of our London office. And this week, I'm pleased to be joined by regular podcast guest, Richard Carter, and Chris Beckett, Head of Equity Research. Now, last week, there were more developments in the way of tariff and trade negotiations, with the US and China announcing trade talks in London, which have commenced this week. And they are currently on day two, with about six hours of discussions yesterday. The US did indicate that it might lift some tech export restrictions if China eases their rare earth shipments limits. Richard, have there been any signs of progress? And is it expected that anything significant will occur once these talks conclude?
We hope so, Oz. I mean, I think it's a little bit early to say whether they've come up with an agreement, but the fact that they're still talking and have been talking for some time, I think is a good sign. Obviously, it's following on from President Trump's call with President Xi at the back end of last week. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But I think markets are pretty relieved that, there's good open communication between the two sides. I'm not sure whether we're going to see anything in the way of sort of big reductions of tariffs, because markets would absolutely love that if that happens. I think this is going to be more around the technical details of what can be exported and what can't, and making sure that the sort of, current arrangements are implemented and both sides are happy. But who knows, maybe if they can reach an agreement on export controls, and maybe tariffs, lower tariffs might follow next. So yeah, markets watching it pretty closely.
Thanks. And on the US, recent indicators suggest a deceleration in the job market. Last week, non-farm payroll figures did meet expectations, but that's despite earlier data in the week indicating a potential slowdown in the job market. And elsewhere in the UK, unemployment has increased. We just got news that it increased slightly to 4.6% from 4.5% over the 3 months leading up to March. Perhaps revisions also to come from the ONS. We'll see. Jury's still out on that. But how have markets responded to this news, and what does this mean for rate cut expectations going forward?
Yeah, as you say, take all UK data, a little bit of pinch of salt at the moment. They couldn't even get the inflation numbers right recently. I mean, it was strange with the US, because the data last week leading up to payrolls was all a bit soggy. It looked like we were gearing up for a pretty bad payrolls number, and the whole trade and tariff uncertainty was starting to hit labor markets. And then once again, as it has done several times in the last few months, payrolls comes out and they're absolutely fine. Even wage growth picked up a bit, job creation was okay. Unemployment rate wasn't changed, so it's still early days with the whole trade stuff. But for now, the labour market's looking fairly robust, albeit the clampdown on immigration may reduce the size of the labour force going forward. The US numbers mean the Fed's still going to be on hold for now. There's no real reason why they should cut rates, given the jobs numbers and the fact that inflation is still, relatively elevated, and with tariffs going up, it's going to go up on the back of that anyway. So Fed's on hold probably, I think, for the next 2 to 3 months. Bank of England, slightly different. The numbers that came out on Tuesday were definitely soft. It wasn't just a rise in unemployment; it was also weaker wage growth. So that means the Bank of England, although they'll probably be on hold at the next meeting in June, it might be that in August they cut rates again. So, yeah, bond yields in the UK falling a little bit, and bond yields in the US rising a bit.
Great. Thanks, Richard. And Chris, thank you for joining us. We are now firmly at the end of earnings season, and it has been a mixed bag of results, with some companies actually providing dual sets of guidance contingent on the resolution of tariffs. So with all this uncertainty, how have markets responded to earnings season? And what have been the common themes in your sector?
Thank you, and thank you for having me on the podcast. I think at the end of results season, and it's nice to get to the end of the results, it's a very busy time as an analyst with an awful lot of noise, and trying to step back from it and try and make some sense of what is driving the performance of companies is what we need to do to work out where we want to invest. At the headline level, it was a pretty solid earnings season. 77% of US companies beat earnings expectations, 66% across Europe, and that includes the UK. So generally, US companies and company managements are a little bit better at managing expectations, or they spend a little bit more time managing expectations than in Europe. Overall, earnings growth was better in the US than in Europe, up 12% in the US, down 2% in Europe. And that justifies, or goes a long way to justifying, the higher valuation that the US trades on. I think the detail when you get into it is a little bit more complicated than that, and you've got to look through the sector level. The US number is flattered by the continuing good performance of the so-called Magnificent Seven, so the very largest companies in the market and indeed the world, which tend to be biased towards technology, even if they're not all out-and-out technology companies. If you look at the median company, median earnings growth in America was 6%, it's 5% in Europe. So the outliers in terms of very strong technology and healthcare and communication services, more specifically, earnings growth in the US, and more lackluster earnings growth from energy and material sector that matter more in Europe, get you back to underlying numbers which aren't that much different. I think if you look in terms of the broad market reaction to it, markets have been driven more by the Trump administration's tariffs, the Liberation Day announcements, and then backing off it and negotiating with various countries, to a point where we're looking through it to an eventual tariff outcome, which is higher than pre-Trump 2.0, but not as bad as the Liberation Day announcements would suggest. So we had the market coming down and then making quite a strong recovery through earnings seasons. The earnings have helped, but I think mainly Trump backing off tariffs, or chickening out, as some commentators would have it, was more important. If you look at what we know and what we've learned from earnings season, guidance from companies has been pretty muted. The proportion of companies guiding higher is probably at a non-recessionary low level. So very few companies improving their expectations for the full year. I think in light of where consumers are and consumer confidence, the level of uncertainty around tariffs, that's not particularly surprising. And I think where we look at companies and sectors that have been struggling, it's how that macroeconomic and political uncertainty has been affecting consumer behavior that have made it difficult for a number of companies. So the macro uncertainty has had a knock-on effect into the oil price, as have some of the actions and plans from OPEC. But the consumer, or the lack of consumer confidence around tariffs, is making discretionary spending very soft at the moment, which is also affecting companies. If I look at what I've learned from my own sectors, and I cover consumer staples, so think food, drink, tobacco, We've had a general slowdown in consumption in developed markets. So again, that macroeconomic uncertainty coming through, particularly in the more discretionary categories. So things like bottles of spirits, paying $50 or $100 for a bottle of scotch is close on a discretionary purchase rather than a more day in, day out staple purchase. And people have been cutting back on those sort of expenditure. A lot of companies and the companies that I talk to, their managements are generally positive about their own businesses and their prospects. A lot of them are optimistic about an improvement in operating conditions and results in the second half of the year. Sometimes I think that that's justified. Some of the time I think it's wishful thinking from management, hoping that something more positive will come up. We're still going through the effects of the cost of living crisis, and tariffs are just another increase in input costs for a number of companies that will have to be recovered, well, either recovered eventually from consumers in terms of higher prices, or absorbed into the cost base of those companies in terms of lower margins. I think we've learned from results seasons, not all companies have the pricing power to put through to put that onto the consumer rather than having margin pressure. The areas where you do have pricing power and have been very good at managing prices, what they call revenue growth management, using very scientific measures to work out what prices for what pack size and in what occasions people will spend on those products. Soft drinks and tobacco companies are very, very good at this, and that comes through in their numbers, which has led me to favor more defensive areas, higher cash flow stories, companies that are easier to be positive about in an uncertain world. Valuations, it's not been the strongest area of the market. Valuations have come down a little bit, but these sort of companies are never particularly cheap, so they don't screen well, particularly in America. US market has underperformed Europe this year, but it's still on a premium, and we're still looking for companies that can justify that premium.
Thanks, Chris. As you said, it's been really busy, and given the volatility on tariffs, the back and forth, as you mentioned, and the general uncertainty in the markets, our goal is to identify long-term opportunities for companies to generate consistent returns. And you mentioned defensive companies that particularly have higher cash flows. Have you and your team identified any areas of opportunity in this time?
I think if I look at what we've done over the last 3 months, it's more reinforced views that we've had rather than giving us a complete change of view. So what I was talking about before, wanting defensive cash flows, liking fee-based income in financial services companies, so alternative asset managers and the like, over companies that are more exposed to the economic cycle. We like companies with pricing power, what I was talking about across food and drink companies before, but pricing power in advertising has been very good. And the biggest providers of advertising are now digital companies. So think the likes of Meta and increasingly Netflix putting advertising onto their platform and having pricing power with their customers. So a lot of technology companies have that pricing power. One of the other areas we've been interested in and become more positive, the work that we've done on aerospace and defense companies in terms of the desire and willingness to increase defense budgets, a lot's been talked about. This is not just a one-off increase. This will be a multi-year and actually a gradual increase in defense spending as the industry ramps up capacity and develops the products that the Western world will need to defend itself. So even after a lot of defense companies' stock prices have increased dramatically at the beginning of the year, if you look at how their customer base and national budgets will prioritize defense spending, they still look attractively valued. So things like British Aerospace in the UK, Saab in Europe, which I have to remind people, they don't make cars. They're a very diversified defense company based in Sweden. And it's those sort of businesses that we're finding attractive when we work through our expectations for defense spending in light of the geopolitical situation that we're seeing in the world.
Thanks, Chris. And these changes we have also implemented on our desk here at the MPS team. So thank you and your team for all your hard work. And thank you both for your insights today and to all of you for listening. Did you enjoy our discussion on the podcast today? We'd love to hear from our listeners. So please review the show now, wherever you're listening, and share it on your socials and tag us at QuiltAchievers. To make sure you don't miss a future episode, tap the subscribe button and we'll be back next week. But in the meantime, head over to our website, www.quiltachievia.com, where you can read the accompanying market overview, as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. You can also stay up to date with our thoughts on market news, industry insights, and our upcoming events and webinars on our website or our social media pages. Finally, if you have any questions you'd like to ask one of our experts for our next episode, simply ask them via the weekly comments page on our website. We'd love to hear your questions. And that's it for today. So thank you again, Richard and Chris, for your time, and to all of you for listening. See you next time.